You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to A Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Zany Mystic, otherwise known in person as Lance White. Tonight, I'm thrilled to have Robert Peralta as my guest. Robert is the internationally acclaimed author of The Divine Blueprint, Roadmap for the New Millennium, and The Divine Architect, The Art of Living and Beyond. He is most noted for his outstanding lectures in North America. His contributions and publications include over 20 years' research in the esoteric sciences, metaphysics, past life, and near-death experience studies, including Earth-based anomalies and extraterrestrial science. Robert has led groups to the sacred sites of Stonehenge, England, Egypt, and the Far East, and his global humanitarian work has brought him prestigious awards. Today, he's a popular guest on radio and television such as CNN, the A&E Channel, Fox Network, Coast to Coast AM, and tonight, the global leading-edge metaphysical show, A Fireside Chat. With that great introduction, let's meet him in person now live. Hi, Robert. How are you?
Hey, Lance. Great to see you. Thanks for having me tonight.
Well, I finished reading one of your books, The Divine Blueprint, today, and I just can't heap enough praise on it. It's just a wonderful book. And you've had quite a life so far, it would appear.
Well, you know, I've been blessed. It's been rich. It's been adventurous. A little painful at times, but for the most part, you know, I count my blessings, considering that living in the material world is a lot harder than maybe living on the other side.
Oh, yes. Before we get into, you know, what you're about and some of the experiences that you've had, you just came out with a YouTube video that's really amazing. Could you talk a little bit about that before we get into some of the other stuff?
Thanks. You're very kind. Yeah, Deborah Welsh and I produced recently, we're producing a film called Just Sign Here, which was predicting actually the fall of the American banking institution and the collapse of the mortgage crisis and the loss of the American dream. The film was mainly shot in 2006 and was predicting what was going to happen that we've actually seen now happen since last fall with the collapse in the American economy and the banking system. And then, I was very fortunate that there was a guy in Los Angeles, Stephen C. Perry, who picked it up and liked the song Whatever Happened to the American Dream. And, geez, you know, this is a great song, terribly recorded. Let's record it properly. Let's put an orchestra on it. Let me do this with you. And let's shoot a video. Let's do a YouTube video as well so we can illustrate what's going on. And so it resulted in that, and now you can see Whatever Happened to the American Dream on YouTube. And it's very, very poignant towards the times. And I think we look towards the movie Just Sign Here coming out probably later on this year.
That's wonderful. You know, I was reading your book, and then I looked at the video, and I was just spellbound by your voice and by the singer that sings with you. She is just fabulous. What's her name?
Her name's Deborah Thacker, and she came out of Saratoga. She's actually part of the Songwriting Guild here in Northern California, and she does a lot of live performance and, you know, recording, and she's just very, very grounded girl, beautiful voice, and I brought the song to her a little over 2 years ago. She loved it, and she's, you know, it's very Paul McCartney.
Yes, I was going to say, you even look a little bit like Paul McCartney in the video, and I just adore Paul. I mean, he, you know, one of the beginning of my awakening was with Beatles, and you know, their experience, and I listened to it, and I just heard something different. It was like the Pied Piper was calling, and you know, it never stopped after that.
Yeah, he's a charmer.
Yeah, and you've met him too, haven't you?
I was very fortunate. Yeah, I did meet him back in November of 2005, and about the last 6 months that he was with Heather Mills. Met him in Los Angeles at the Beverly Hills Hilton Hotel during the Adopt a Minefield Gala Benefit Dinner, which raises funds for landmine victims through the United Nations Association. And was only brief, but it was enough to leave an indelible impact.
Yeah,
on me.
I'm sure.
All my friends looked at me and said, "You're glowing, and you're standing about three inches off the ground here."
You know, oh yeah, even just watching you perform in a recording, you get that feeling. It comes through. Going back to the American Dream a little bit, the level of corruption and greed that we're seeing play itself out here, is this going to continue on? Is the collapse continuing on? Are we just seeing the tips, the edges, or the tip of the iceberg, do you think?
Well, you know, I think that the polarities on the planet right now are quite divided and quite profound, and I think those that are seeking higher ideals, standards for living, and are looking to contribute, there's a lot of growth, there's a lot of profound growth in the spiritual, metaphysical, arenas and community. On the other hand, you know, the old world is still very much there, and it's sort of an old world versus the new world meeting, and there's an awful lot of, you know, the corruption aspect of, whether the clerics or the sheikhs or whether they're the Mexican mafia or drug cartels from Afghanistan, you know, it's just they're going to do what they do, and they're completely based here in the material world. In other words, they really feel under this sort of spell and illusion that this is the primary goal here is to get rid of the white Anglo-Saxon devil, which is an illusion.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, while they're so religious on one end, it's odd that they, you know, a great deal of them are involved in corruption, etc. And in the meantime, you have other people that, you know, are seeking higher guidance and actually making contact in the higher realms with the Pleiadian or Elohim or whatever you want to call them. You know, it's a time that has never been seen like this ever before, and the fact that you can look at so much, and it's a time of choosing sides.
Absolutely. Know? Absolutely. And you've actually had direct experience with, as many of my guests have, with higher dimensional beings and light beings and so on. Your description of the first visit when you... Maybe you could talk a little bit about that. You were 21 or 22 when you requested a... you want to talk about that story, or is that...
Oh, sure, of course. Okay. Yeah, I'm very happy to. I was just at the New Living Expo last weekend in San Francisco, California.
Oh, wonderful.
And I told people there, I said, look, you know, I'm 53 now, and I'm probably going to go to my grave telling this same exact story, and it will say on the back of my, the epitaph on the back of my gravestone will say, he stayed with the same damn story all the way to the end. And that's what I'll be remembered for, if nothing else, maybe.
I'm sorry I had to ask you.
But,
that.
You know, that goes part and parcel with maybe because it happened, maybe that, let's consider it a launching pad, at least for me.
Right, right.
Of 30 years of this research. And then, of course, you know, maybe I can turn it around and then return back what I learned from the experience and gained in the meantime. So to answer your question real quickly, I was very fascinated by the thought that there were other beings out there, that they could hear what we were feeling or sensing or saying to each other, that I felt that there was a community. In fact, you know, even going back to, like John Lennon being with Maharishi, and when they came back from Maharishi, they learned, what did you learn while there? And he said, well, we learned that thoughts were things and could, you know, that they were real things and had the ability to travel.
Mm-hmm.
If you sent a thought form into the universe, someone might respond to that. And years later, when I was 21, I just concentrated, lit a candle, very simple experiment, and I was 21 years old. You never think anything will happen, but, you know, we love to play. And I was on the California-Nevada border in what's called Heavenly Valley, of all things. It's in, it's right there on the California-Nevada border where it's actually at Lake Tahoe.
Yeah, I live not far from there.
Beautiful area.
Oh, it is very beautiful.
So I sent a thought form out to the universe and, said, you know, if there's anything out there, you know, I'd like to be, I'd like to make a connection. And if there was a connection, I would use it for world service or I'd give it, turn it over the experience to other people. Perhaps we could grow from this. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Very naive, very fun, very not thinking, really putting a lot of thought or even belief in it, actually. It was I just, maybe I said the right thing. Maybe it was my karmic aspect. Maybe it was agreed upon. Whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Something out there perhaps heard the request, and nothing happened. You know, I went to bed, and I was downstairs in a two-story townhouse-style cabin. About 2:30 in the morning, I was startled awake at what sounded like almost like a freight train going through the living room. A deafening sound, and suddenly the whole room became charged and illumined with activity, almost like there was lightning in the room.
Mm.
And then suddenly, what looked like literally 3 8.5-foot-tall silver cosmonauts of some sort materialized in the room. And, you know, when people hear that, you know, your mind doesn't really have room for that, really. I mean, for me experiencing it, we didn't have room for that. You know, I didn't say, oh, my God, the experiment's working. Look, let's see. No. No, it was like suddenly being catapulted out of the material world like this and being placed in a state of suspended animation where I remember at one point floating, as they did something to me to float me somehow in a blue-like bubble.
Uh-huh.
I remember inside my body or inside my mind, it felt like I was a particle point trying to find an anchor for itself because I could hear my mind's voice.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it was so filled with so much distortion and so much activity and so much shock that there was only snippets of me existing. And all I remember was I was suddenly levitated above the bed somehow.
Uh-huh.
Somehow they had the ability to open up the side of the house, and there was like a tunnel, you know, like you see in the motion picture Contact. You know,
oh, yes.
I'm okay to go.
Yes, I love that movie.
Okay to go. And somehow I went through this wormhole, and I disappeared out the side of the house, and I was taken with these things. And at that point, it just becomes a very, very painful experience with all this. What I remember was millions of particles floating over me of blue, green, violet, indigo, red. And as it did, it was terribly painful. And for some reason, I remember traveling through this thing and remember thinking that if I don't think, if I just blank my thoughts, it's a lot easier. Suddenly, it became a lot easier on me. The minute I began to think about what is happening here, I it's almost like I became more susceptible to it. And I was taken into some kind of room of some sort, which almost have no memory. And then back to the wormhole, and then back into the bedroom, and then lower down on the bed, and then the storm eventually disappeared instantly, and the beings just disappeared. And I had no idea what happened. The first couple hours was just, you know, just completely startled. Paralyzed would be more like the word.
Yeah, yeah.
Eventually, I pulled myself out of bed and crawled to the mirror and found that I was soaked in something like an oil or a honey substance.
Huh.
And I had tremendous sunburn across all the front part of my body. And then I threw up and eventually went back to my bed and laid down. And I had there was an odd thing that happened. I'll mention this and then we can maybe go into another question if you like. But
yeah.
You know, the odd thing was, I remember closing my eyes, being fully awake, and being completely, utterly in a state of shock from whatever this was. And when I closed my eyes, strangely enough, I had a 360 panoramic view. I could actually see around the room.
Huh.
And that eventually went away, and I went and fell into a deep sleep. And by the time I woke up the following morning, which there were no witnesses, my parents, my sister, and my brother-in-law had slept upstairs. They had no idea that anything had even happened. They
wow.
My mother was standing over me and asking, you know, trying to wake me, and I looked up, and I wasn't sure where I was.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, I kind of looked around, and everybody was acting normal. And I lied there, and I thought, how could they have not, you know, I said, did anything happen last night? They go, no. You know, they have no idea what had happened. They were completely removed from the experience. And I had, you know, this boy, you've got a big sunburn. I said, yeah. And that was it. And I locked myself in my apartment for 3 months in Los Gatos, California after that. When I came back and only went to work, I didn't tell anybody about it for the first 3 days. No one.
Uh-huh.
I didn't believe it had even happened. I didn't know what it even was. I I think that when we wrote the first chapter of the book, Divine Blueprint, we called it Angels in Spacesuits because there was a large period there where, well, maybe angels come in spacesuits. Maybe that's what that was. And eventually I made my way to J. Allen Hynek, who was recording Project Blue Book at the time. So I'm one of the original guys, very young at the time, who made my way eventually at that same year in 1978 to, and then I met Richard Hoagland before he had all the silver hair he has now.
Oh yeah,
And William Shatner and all these other, J. Allen Hynek and you know, Edgar Mitchell. All these guys were out there, and here I was, a young 21-year-old, amidst the convention, trying to figure out what was going on.
Wow, amazing. A lot of trailblazers out there.
Mm.
You found out later on that those were Arcturians, is that correct?
Yeah, you must have looked read the book. Well, you know, we feel that that's what it was. Just for, you know, in a 30-year search, you know, you go through trying to figure out what it was.
Oh, absolutely.
First of all, it bears mentioning that I never had another dream or a flashback or anything since that night. I've never seen those things ever again.
Huh, interesting.
Only in my memory. The Arcturian thing came up in 1992, and then that came, the story quickly behind that is that I had a reading, and the lady had told me, you know, that this was a very real experience, and that these are Arcturian cosmonauts, they're scientists of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
And then a week later, I had another reading with a totally separate person, and they didn't know each other,
mm-hmm.
who had said the same thing. But interestingly enough, both of them, and this was hard for me to understand at the time because this was many years later, it said that I, you know, that there was some sort of implantation on the back of my neck. But neither one of these people knew each other, and both of them mentioned it within a week period of each other. And both said, you know, you have an implant on the back of your neck. And both of them had said that these are some sort of Arcturian aspects.
Wow.
I thought it was remarkable accuracy that two people
absolutely
could tell a similar story and not know each other.
Absolutely, and they're referenced in your book, too, so, you know, people can get in touch with them to find
mm-hmm.
out. You know, because a lot of people are starting to kind of come out of the E.T. closet now, and it's not such a frightening thing. What was I going to ask you? Well, there were other visitors that you had subsequently from Pleiades and other places, isn't that correct?
Oh, yeah. You know, we're all being visited, Lance. There's no one here that's not being visited. The only difference is that some people that are being visited are made aware of the experience and then can remember it or witness to it, a part of it, or even altered dramatically from it. But so some are just having more awareness of it than others.
I think what I was going to say, they're putting words in my mouth, it seems, is that some of them, if not all of them, are various aspects of future selves and multidimensional aspects of our own being. So they're basically family. You know, we could have a smattering of Arcturian and Pleiadian and Orion and Sirian and probably a little bit of everything.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. There's a stellar heritage behind us. And I got in a lot of trouble for that, you know.
Yeah.
The first time I was on the Art Bell show,
uh-huh.
oh, God, this must have been 1990, I think it was 98, somewhere in there, 10 years ago.
Wow.
And he was as hot as could be. He was a trailblazer, you know.
Oh, yeah.
That show in the 90s like that, you know, you couldn't stop Art Bell. He was a beautiful guy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'd said that, you know, I found in the lost books of the Bible, specifically in Job, that you could actually find in a Christian bookstore.
Mm.
I mean, lost books of the Bible and, you know, other writings, the Gnostic and the Dead Sea Scrolls, etc. I found this line, literally, it said that we were descendants of the house of Pleiades and the house of Cirrus.
Mm-hmm.
And so I later interpreted that or brought that to a couple of people, and they said, well, in those days, they were referring to the declaration on the sky and the constellation of what they were talking about. Later on, you know, the conservative sections would dismiss it as, you know, other things in the Bible they couldn't understand, or they wouldn't validate it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But we can see now through things like the Dead Sea Scrolls and the Gnostic text and others that there's a number of references that we are descendants, meaning that mankind is maybe from this aspect. And then, of course, you go into other things like Zachariah Sitchin's work, or other people will say, well, yeah, so it's definitely a bloodline that's been brought here, and that the planet is seeded somehow. And I'm not going to argue the Adam and Eve point or whatever, but
exactly.
You know, it makes sense. And then if you trace back the karmic gridline of souls that are coming here, the karmic bound souls that are commissioned here, you find that there's in past life regression and other things. You find, there's definitely a description of another area of existence before this lifetime, and seems to point to this area, and then the monuments too.
Oh yeah, your travels to Egypt talk a little bit about that, and the writings and the carvings and everything. You want to talk a little bit about Egypt? That was quite a journey. You also had a near death experience on the plane.
Yeah, I got. We were on the last day before the trip. We'd been in the Valley of the Kings. We'd gotten sick about halfway into the trip, on a 15-day trip. We got sick in Luxor. 47 out of 50 of us got sick, including me. And so we went through all the desert just being completely, utterly sick. And I got to the day before we were going to leave, 2 days before we were going to leave, we'd arrived at the pyramids of Giza. And I thought, this is incredible. Here I am. I'm just sort of a slight shade of green color now. Green-gray.
True alien.
Yeah, really white, green-gray, just pale. And I remember standing on my balcony and looking at the pyramids, which was across the street from us, and thinking, God, I traveled 9,000 miles, and I fell 500 yards short. I was too sick to get across the street.
Wow.
And so I made it the next day. I did make it into the King's Chamber and everything. And then I came back, and that night was the night before we were going to leave. And a doctor had, finally we'd gotten a doctor. And he said, well, he advised me to stay in Giza, and that I would check myself into a hospital the next day. And I was way too hydrated to fly. I'm not staying in any, I've had enough. I'll check myself in New York. If I can't make it any farther, I'll check myself in New York. But he gave me an injection of some sort of antibiotic. I went to sleep that night with my roommate Colin, in the other bed next to me. And that night, it was an out-of-body slash near-death experience, in the sense that I was teleported, I think, to the other side and stayed there for quite a while. Because when we lucid dream, you're aware that you're dreaming.
Uh-huh.
And eventually you'll come out of that. Most lucid dreaming only lasts us anywhere between about 1 to 2 minutes, and then on up even as much as 10 and even 12 minutes. Most lucid dreaming is in that sort of window in dream therapy.
Mm-hmm.
This just kept going on and on and on. And I realized at some point, as I met somebody over there who took me in various places, that there was a portion of me that had died. And
wow.
I didn't understand at that time that we could be multidimensional, that we could be living in simultaneous places. And I died, went to the other side, and then learned about what life was like on the other side. And when I came back, it changed my life literally forever, and then installed hopefully a sense of service, trying to be grounded and trying to tell what I've learned out of this experience authentically without embellishment, which is, I don't know if everybody will agree with that, but
yeah.
I do.
Well, you also talk a lot about the life review, and I think that's something that's really important for people to understand. You helped your father through an experience with that by going through the life review with him prior to, and I know Daniel Brinkley does a lot of this work too. It actually helps when you cross over, doesn't it?
It really does. When I came back from my experience, I realized that I was here on some kind of mission to dispel the myths and mysteries of death.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew enough about the other side to at least share that with audiences. And then I shared that with my dad in the last 12 months of his life, gave him books like Danny and Brinkley and Betty Eady, and read him things out of Barbara Marciniak, and you know, a number of these tales that life is a cyclic and that the secret of life's continuum is not such a big secret if you want to look for it. And it was really about the fact that we don't really die. The physical body just simply runs out of time, and it simply can't sustain itself in the material world under the laws that are here because of the physical decay, mental and emotional decay, etc. When people die, you know, for the most part, they see in a blinking of an eye almost their entire life at the point that they die.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can become very startled at the change in location, which could be anywhere from the point where they've died, where their body is, to actually being teleported quickly to another aspect of existence, depending on what they want to do or what the guides and committee and what you agree at a soul level to do.
Uh-huh, right.
Some will exist here and say, you know, I'm sorry, this is an illusion, there's been a mistake, this is real, and I couldn't have died because this is real, and there's an argument that breaks out. And then there's others that simply are relieved and quite amazed that they did it. It can be any number of things, depending on if you died suddenly or slowly, where you're at in your awareness and how you died, how the guides wanted to bring you out, and how they present themselves. It can be very different for everybody, just like a person walking out in the building in the New York streets feels differently about what they're encountering.
Mm-hmm.
Two people come out of the building, they both see something different.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. The Seth material kind of indicates that we might each have our own dimension, you know, including anything that can perceive, you know, with eyes is living in its own world, literally. I've also read that some who don't cross over to the other side, some who are resistant, or maybe they've had very disturbing exits, or they've led a life where they don't really want to confront their current life, can get stuck or remain in the astral plane, in the lower fours. Is that something you're familiar with?
You know, it was really illustrated in a couple of great films. You know, one was Always by Steven Spielberg, a 1989 film.
Mm.
And, you know, Richard Dreyfuss, you know, died in an airplane and then existed for the most part. The story is about him living on the astral plane.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, we don't see any other dead people or the other community that is all existing on the astral plane. It was a personalized love story, but yet very real in the sense that he had flashes of his own life and was given a commission to come back and influence and inspire other people.
Uh-huh.
In the film Ghost with Patrick Swayze, we see another twist on the same styled story where Patrick's on the other side and does encounter a number of astral people, angry people who have died.
Yeah.
The guy on the train, you know, in the hospital. And then no one can hear him or see him until, of course, we have this interesting twist where only Whoopi Goldberg can kind of see him.
Here. Yeah.
And it's very true. There's existence on the astral plane quite pronounced. And there are animals, and there are people, and there are formations. It would be like diving in the ocean and seeing all these little fish swim by you that are purple and green and all these other different fish. And you'd go, oh, this has been going on the whole time?
Yeah.
This is the way it's set up in that dimension. You're just underneath that surface of that particular channel.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing. You see formations that don't have any formation like a human figure to us on the astral plane. They might be like a blob, like an amoeba that has consciousness. In many cases, more advanced than, you know, human beings by a long shot. You know, interdimensional creatures.
I've had one experience that I could definitely say was the astral plane, and it seemed like it was extremely busy and staticky and noisy and buzzing and merged into, you know, you could just sense different timelines and things. It was very disturbing. I wanted to comment because you mentioned these various movies, and you've often been compared to that little kid that was in the movie The Sixth Sense, which is one of my favorite films. Why is that?
You know, when the movie came out, it was incredible timing for me. I mean, I just released Divine Blueprint, and it was just starting to kind of make its way around the country. I got a lucky break. I was in Barnes & Noble and Borders by Christmas time of 98. When the movie came out in 99, we were well integrated. Our timing was just right on top of the release of the film. And then I'd done an ad, you know, that would tell them where they could find me as a radio guest. And it started kind of from the radio aspect of, you know, well, you know, you've seen the movie The Sixth Sense, now we've got the real thing here, you know. Well, Robert sees apparitions. These are dead people, you know. Do you believe that, you know, dead people are standing around you? Well, he's going to tell us this morning. And that's how it started, and it kind of took and took and took, and other people would hear other people's show, and I went on Coast to Coast. And then that's all it took was Coast to Coast sort of launched that, too, with the movie and then the comparison. And then I was explaining, you know, that, I saw dead people. And, in fact, the funny part was is that we're the dead ones, and they're more alive than we are.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is like Gunvalo Melchizedek says, when you come to planet Earth, this is as dead as you're going to get.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with that. You know, and of course, we're compared to sheeple today because we're so dumbed down with, you know, various intentional methods and also just the sheer nature of being bombarded by so much stimuli.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned that we're being influenced in our growth here by spirit guides and other esoteric forces, which we're not aware of, and I totally agree with that. Why do you say that?
Well, because the field around our body is interacting with other fields that we just don't see because they're not in the material world, because our field can't be seen in the material world for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And that field is malleable and susceptible to other energetic forces that can actually become a part of it. Some, you know, we have spirit attachments. We have sometimes polyps in the field where the field has been invaded and carries a little polyp of some sort.
Huh.
It could be an entity, like it lodges itself. You might say it's like a spiritual parasite to a degree. And in other cases, there are muses and all kinds of characters on the other side. And some, I mean, how many times have you gone to say something, Lab? Have you ever gone to say something in front of a little group of people or friends, suddenly what comes out of your mouth is not at all what you were going to say, and you go, did I say that?
That's
not what I wanted to say.
Oh, yeah.
How did that happen?
Yeah.
You know, and it's a little, like, bewitched.
Yeah. Well, it happens all the time on this radio show. Sometimes I just kind of blank out, and I'm not even, I know I'm here, but the words are coming out, and I don't know where they're coming from, so I just figure they're the right ones to say. I'm just being given my lines.
Yeah, sure.
You know?
Oh, they love to use radio and medium.
Yeah.
They love to have a voice on shows where they can reach more souls.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what it's all about, isn't it?
Well, there is, and it's good that they can do this. And there's a certain amount of non-interference clause that goes along with it.
Mm.
The astral plane is mixed with beings that are just like us, that are, you know, obeying the laws of the land, and then there's others that are jumping from person to person and trying to cause havoc and throw spins on things.
Yes,
you know, we see it coming out in the news. There are spins on many things that aren't completely accurate by any means.
Oh, totally. I call those Republicans.
Well, you said it, and to a degree it's true, but it's true with all races, religions, creeds, people, societies, and communities. I mean,
bankers, kings,
queens. You have all kinds of you have all kinds of people that are beings that are in. We're not all our thoughts are our own. You know, a lot of times we have a thought and it's kind of, you know, given to us, and we're not sure who's doing the talking.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I think you mentioned this in your book, too, that during periods of transition, there are more people committing suicide and murdering other people. And I just read something today in the online about the increase in people killing off their relatives and then shooting themselves.
Right.
I consider that to be part of the process that we're going through of cleansing and purification, which is leading to an ascension process. What do you think about the ascension of planet Earth and that whole idea that we're moving up into a higher density at a transition point at some point in around 2012?
Right. Well, first of all, I think that the atmosphere is becoming very, very thin between the veils.
Mm.
So what's kind of coming down from the fourth dimension is trickling into the third. And we're having a kind of a play out here of some sort where entities that are more active here than they've ever been. There's a susceptibility to people through all kinds of toxins that we share here as little elixirs to make us feel better. It's very hard to live in the material world. So, of course, we have the drug, alcohol, and tobacco industries, multi-billion-dollar industries, and some people are very, very susceptible, you know, due to the toxicity in their body.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas the rising in frequency, it can be inspiring, uplifting, it can be, you know, exhilarating, and it can catapult you into, you know, kind of a new way, modality of thinking and living.
Uh-huh.
And that is going to increase. And it is increasing slowly but surely. It's what the Pleiadian aspect, I'm actually a very big subscriber to, I like what Barbara Marciniak has to say. In her theories on what's called the, you know, the nanosecond, and then the three basic, what do you call, windows of the nanosecond, beginning with the harmonic convergence in 87, a change in 97, and then the change in 707, 2007, that leads to the winter solstice in 2012, and it will be like you've lived 1,000 years in a mere 25.
Yeah.
Which, if you look technologically, it's exactly that.
Yes, absolutely. I noticed one phenomenon that, since we're on the subject of various substances, that hasn't hit the mainstream media yet, and that's the phenomenon of chemtrails. And it just seems to be that it's just kind of hovering underneath the radar, and I was wondering if that's something that's an ET origin project, or if that's strictly black operations that are trying to do something that we're totally unaware of.
Yeah, well, you know, there's chemtrails from a whole different group of sources. I mean, some chemtrails are just nothing more than jet streams, and then people read into it. Some chemtrails are government designed to control spray or to control a bug population, etc. You know, some chemtrails are designed for sinister purposes, and some chemtrails aren't even anything that's from here. Some are coming from, actually, I think some of the actual craft that are just passing through the atmosphere, and it's altered, you know, the barometric pressure in the ionosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And so you really have it coming from several different sources. And it's difficult to say which one's which, you know. But we are being influenced constantly. There's an advancement in scalar technology, you know,
and HARP and the rest of it.
HARP, chemtrails, manipulation of weather patterns and atmospheric pressure. We're entering into a whole another dimensional world, which I think, going back to the ascension, is kind of, we're at a point where I think we're at the tipping point where we're just getting smart enough to, unfortunately, maybe end the material world as we know it. And I think before that happens, I'd like to believe, and I do believe, that there's going to be an intervention of some sort. And that's what they're calling, the conservatives will call it the rapture. The Maya will, you know, say that the day of reckoning, you know, the Mayan calendar. And all, there's many, many ways to say it, but I think what it is, there's going to be an upset in the, you know, pathway for the incoming karmic bound souls to come in and fill their karmic debts and contracts and everything, and the spiritual hierarchy isn't going to let anything alter that.
Mm-hmm.
When things like the atomic bomb went off in Hiroshima in 45, that was allowed at that point. From that point on, all the souls became aware of how dangerous the whole paradigm could become. But we may reach some real changes. There may be some mass harvest. I don't think that we're going to, I think we're going to be around a lot longer than people give us credit for. I don't think the world's going to, I think we're going to pass through 2012, and it will be, everything will be heightened. I think there'll be a lot of problems. I think there'll be a lot of solutions. I think there'll be a lot of groups leaving, a lot of groups staying. But not everybody will understand quite what has happened. The
mm-hmm.
one equation that is playing out here is the fact that there is a return of the spiritual hierarchy that's making its way into the atmosphere that's extraordinarily subtle
mm-hmm.
and slight and
mm-hmm.
in the dream state. And for those that are ready, they will materialize very gently. And for the rest of the world, they won't have a clue and will deny anything has happened, such as the Bible says.
Well, I agree with you on all of that, and it seems like there might be several timelines that are working themselves out, including those souls who may be incarnated here and are not ready to move into a higher reality. They may continue on with a third dimensional experience, as the shift occurs. And in your book, you talk about us moving into or through the photon belt. Can you share a little bit about that, too? Because I know other people speak about this as well.
Well, it's the mysterious photon belt. It doesn't get written about anywhere nearly today as it was back in the 90s. It was, at the time, a phase I was going through of studying the phenomena of the photon belt. It remains a theory that a great wall of galactic light passes through here, this universe, at the end of the precession of the equinox, and then because of it passing through, it alters life as we know it. The Christians will talk about, in the Bible, they talk about, the sun being blotted out of the sky like a sackcloth of blood was put on it. The photon belt theory says this is because of the barometric atmospheric pressure that the sun would not be completely blotted out, but would appear as an orange color and turn the atmosphere orange because we're passing through this galactic belt. You have many people that are coming from the science community, the religious community, and the metaphysical community trying to find out if it's even a real, entity.
Mm-hmm.
And that with it, as we passed into the outer lip of the null zone, we would go, because of the pressure of going through it, we would see what would be considered 3 days of darkness.
Mm-hmm.
I will validate that. So you kind of have these scientists saying one thing about this photon belt theory, and then the ancient prophets saying a similar thing in their language in the text that's today considered the King James or standard version of the Bible. And as we pass through the 3 days of darkness, there will be many souls that will not retain their material bodies and will step out. Many souls will survive it.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the third day, will be commenced with a return of the spiritual hierarchy.
Mm-hmm.
In which case, the earth has reached the end of the crescendo of a cycle, and these beings become known, and we're stepping into the galactic society, and there is a changeover and a merge and a blend. Now, how that plays out, there's the wild theories that are going to be very evident to everybody, and then there's the conservative theories that say it's only a slight change.
Yeah.
And won't be noticed so much and won't be so dramatic.
Well, it's fun to entertain all of those thoughts. I tend to lean towards the more dramatic changes. And there are some that say that we'll be literally lifted by our ET family off the planet. So, there's all anything is possible, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
So,
it's a remarkable time that we're in. It's a time that if people focus their attention, you can grow profoundly. If you don't focus your attention, you can be pulled away quickly from the other realities that are presenting themselves to you and the opportunities. You got great coaches out there. You know, I'm a been a graduate of the Robbins Research Institute. It's more down here, Tony Robbins, this kind of thing. But you know what he's saying and what the others are saying, whether they're esoteric or they're more of a down here style coach, pretty much the same thing. Stay very, very present. Stay focused. Where you put your attention is where you will be.
Yeah.
And more so now than probably ever before because of the tremendous acceleration in the cellular aspect and in the esoteric aspect. So, you know, I would say those that are coachable, listen to people like the Eckhart Tolle these kind of guys, good spiritual medicine.
And Wayne Dwyer's a pretty good one, too. He's kind of mainstream, but he's got a lot of good messages.
He's a beautiful guy and a necessary catalyst and bridge between sort of the regular Joes that watch the Oprah Winfrey show and the metaphysical crowd who is searching hard. He's a wonderful, so is Deepak Chopra, wonderful blend of sort of explaining how the, you know, both sides can kind of come into the middle with a school of thought, step out of the sort of religious aspect that might be, you know, somewhat holding you back a little bit from looking at a broader picture.
Right.
You know,
it creates limitation.
Patterns and behavioral models and belief systems are pretty ingrained here. Those guys are wonderful bridges. I like to see the work that I've done being exactly that. A nice, you know, not a messenger, you know, even though I know that there's a lot that says so, and even on my book, we've kind of played with it a little bit, but really I'm a spiritual reporter, just reporting on the things that I find that are interesting to have the mind consider.
Oh, absolutely, and I'm telling you, your book definitely is a page-turner. One of the things that seems to be common about all these different schools of thought is that it's really vital. Two things that I notice that are important is it's really vital for us to be present to our thoughts because they do start manifesting more rapidly, and the importance of learning how to love ourselves first, because we seem to be riddled with insecurities and fears and doubts and so on and so forth. And I think you mentioned that some about in your experience that you had on the other side as well.
Oh, absolutely. We're constantly bombarded with thousands of images, from the television to the people that are walking on the material plane to the other side.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I'm not sure who's doing the talking here. Sometimes I, like a lot of people, I can be very serene, extraordinarily grounded, very nice, feel good.
Yeah.
Other times I feel as though like a radio station in between channels is just terrifying static.
Yeah.
I become very confused. And the astrological conjunctions, I think, you know, are largely to be considered here. It used to be where I didn't really consider them. They go, oh, well, you know, so-and-so's in retrograde and all this, blah, blah, blah. You know, I didn't pay much attention to it until the last few years. It's become really serious where I consult my astrologer and say, where are we at in this window?
Yeah.
You know, because, and I'm filled with thoughts that aren't mine, you know.
Yeah.
Filling me with some things that, hey, what is this? And
well,
it'll pass. You're going through this and it'll pass by, you know, 2 days, and within 2 days, yeah, it would pass.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. I've noticed the same thing, and also that my awareness sometimes spirals up and down, and I go through brief periods that, again, seem to conjunct, like you said, with astrological aspects, and I just seem to have forgotten everything that I thought I knew. And then something pulls me up, and then all of a sudden there's more awareness and more attention, and, you know, I'm back again. And like you said, we have so many thoughts that sometimes it's almost like having a stand-up comedian in there, and other times it's not so funny.
Yeah. It's so true. Very true. Very well put.
Yeah. Your loved ones, are they still contacting you? Are you still in contact with your dad, for instance, or any of the people?
Well, funny, you know, my dad has come back quite recently and I've been very, very present, very very much here, I think. I've had a couple of instances where I sit with a friend and we would start talking about him, and all of a sudden then my friend looked at me and said, you know, it feels like your dad's here or something, you know, or something, and there would be something said that would be a word that only he would use.
Yeah.
And there would be like a little flash of light, you know, or whatever in the room, and there would be kind of this feeling of, you know, that he was here. Recently, a woman gave me a hug and said, you know, do you smell something? I said, yeah. And you know, my dad used to wear Aramis, you know.
Oh.
Cologne and everything. Once
yeah.
I just wear a little bit of it, you know. And suddenly we both smelled it. I thought, how can that be? She goes, I'm not wearing anything, you know, perfume. And I thought, oh, how could that be? You know, I smell it, and she smelled it. And
mm-hmm.
She goes, you know, it feels like your dad. Is your dad here? I go, well, yeah, I think so, because that's exactly the smell that he used to wear and everything.
Yeah.
And that smells just like him. And I felt it, too. It was, we just had a spooky moment.
Yeah.
Know, only
yeah.
2 weeks ago.
Wow. Occasionally I've smelled the cologne of my mother. It's she used to wear Lucien Leon.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just get just a brief whiff of it. And now I just assume that probably there's so many spirits in the room that I can't see that if I saw them, I'd probably go running screaming out of the house.
Yeah.
You know, and then if we have a feeling or a premonition or a thought about a loved one, they probably are there. You said something really profound that in your book about that too, that you were in the process, I think, of having a communication with the other side, and then you got very emotional and waves of emotion wafted over you, and you felt they had this sucking sound or something, and it dropped you right out of there. Can you talk about that a little bit? What our emotions, the intensity of our emotions, takes us out of these other higher dimensions.
Yeah, you know, when we're on the other side, when we have out-of-body experiences, when we're dreaming, we tend to go out of our body and we tend to be held by the silver cord that is, you know, embedded in us. We may be experiencing another experience in another dimension that's very, very deep. And then because there is so much emotion, emotional body becomes very charged and active around the material body. And suddenly, because of that, it draws that spiritual sort of cord and your light body, and it kind of brings it back like a rubber band.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's why people, you know, you always see in the movies, the person is dreaming and dreaming, and then suddenly, you know, they take a deep breath, they're startled at the change in location, which is now their bedroom, and they shoot up out of bed, and they go, oh, and they realize it was only a dream, you know? And the two are very held together. If the soul goes out, spirit goes out too far and gets involved in something, it can radio a signal back to the physical body and the light body around the physical body, and suddenly you'll be pulled back.
Yes.
From what
yes.
it is. Because you're to be in your body. Yet people travel all the time. You're to mainly be, you know, somewhat around your body. It's for best results. I'm not a real big fan of people in the... I mean, I don't want to downgrade astral projection. I think it works for some. I think it's fine. I just think it's a very, very volatile thing to kind of get into. And I think the best results I've seen as far as results, and I always go by results, consistency, is that it seems like people get the best results when they're very, very grounded, and that's where we probably should remain.
Yes, I totally agree with you on that one. And in fact, you had a close friend, a very tragic death of somebody who spent hours meditating out at the end of her silver cord, and do you want to share about that one, the other experience? That was
kind of wondering about, yeah, these deaths, you know, that suddenly happened, like Danny Gans died over the weekend, you know, and Larry King, who was a Las Vegas entertainer. You know, sometimes there's these mysterious deaths, and in this case, he kept obsessed with the astral plane, obsessed with visiting the other side, and she kept saying, I'm going to visit the other side. She almost considered her mission to be like a astronaut, you know, only an out-of-body experience. And we kept telling her, you stay in your body and stop playing with all this kind of stuff. And we went to Mount Shasta. We came back. She evidently attempted some kind of experiment, and she passed away. This is a perfectly healthy girl, no medical issues, no nothing. When she died, I just happened to have a friend of mine at the house, Art, was at the house doing sessions. And I got the call from a friend that her body had been found, and that's why she didn't show up at my house that afternoon. She was supposed to be at my house around 4.
Uh-huh.
We got back around 7 from dinner, still no call, phone call that she had been passed, that she had passed away. And the whole time, all throughout the day, I kept feeling like, and she was just arriving at the door. I went to the door several times thinking, well, she's here. I went to the back window and looked over into the little parking stall.
Uh-huh.
I thought, God, it just feels like she's here. Her car is there. Or, you know, but I kept thinking she'll be here any minute. And she was never here. And then finally, you know, my friend had tuned into it and said, no, I think she is here. She says that nobody can hear her. She said she came here to the house. And she's crying and saying something to the effect of, you know, you were right. She goes, I'm stuck on the other side.
Wow.
She said she couldn't get back in her body.
Wow. Wow. I guess once you go beyond you the silver cord snaps, that's kind of it. You can't get back.
Be careful while you're here.
Yes, exactly. I prefer being grounded myself. You've had so much wonderful contact from the other side and from extraterrestrial influences. If you had to sum up what the message for us is from these various sources, what would you say that would be? Okay, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, my girlfriend reminds me always in England, Helen always reminds me to stay grounded, stay focused, stay healthy, stay in tune, do your homework, you know, be very, very tuned into your heart, and look towards giving the best you can each and every day to each person you meet.
Wonderful. Well, Robert, we've run out of time. Would you please tell our listeners where your website is?
They can find me at unitedlight.com. That's unitedlight.com. And you can email me at robert@unitedlight.com. And you can find me at YouTube also.
Robert Wonderful.
Perella.
Well, Robert, you know, we've run out of time. That time just flew by. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks, Lance.
All right.
Blessed. Many blessings.
Many blessings to you, too.
Okay.
Good night.
Talk soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.